Hello, it's the Ghost. Welcome to They Call Me the Ghost. If you're a fan of the strange but true happening in our world and the dark and mysterious goings on, then you are in the right place. We all know that Halloween's coming up, and what does that bring with it? Lots of candy. And I'm going to share this little experience with you called Razors in the Candy. So sit back and take a listen. I always hated that old spinster on the corner of Redbud Drive. When I was growing up, I didn't know any better. I used to think she was a witch or maybe a monster or something. I didn't know about crazy cat ladies and alcoholism at that time. So for some reason, in my child's brain, I just assumed she was cutting up little girls and boys to feed her army of strays. Since everyone in my class was convinced that she was the spawn of Satan, I asked my dad why no one was doing anything about it. He rolled his eyes as if humoring me and said, "Nowadays, we don't burn witches, we just avoid them." I would always pedal my bike faster at that corner, ignoring the stop sign and even the honks of oncoming traffic as I steered my lavender cruiser homewards. I remembered the fast clickety-clack of the playing cards every afternoon as I frantically pedaled to put a safe distance behind me. 10 years down the road was enough distance for me to acknowledge she was probably just a lonely middle-aged woman who thought drinking with cats was less sad than drinking alone, and maybe she was right. I know I would open up a bottle of wine with my dog some of those lonely nights when I was back home from college. I was content to keep our uneasy truth where I would return half-hearted wave at her silhouette in the window when I was passing by, if she didn't come any closer to me. Unfortunately, that was something I could not do on Halloween, even back when I was a kid. The only thing the old lady on Redbud was known for, aside from day drinking and ticking off the local animal control, was her baked treats. 4 times a year, she would participate in the local ISD bake sale. Despite not having any kids, the PTA insisted and practically begged her to provide her cinnamon apple pie tart for the silent auction. Even though this woman seemed to be kept alive by Jim Beam and cat dander, she could definitely bake a mean pastry. And so my little brother was quite insistent that we stop at her house to round out the night of trick-or-treating. I had driven in for the weekend. I was homesick, missing my parents. I might have even missed my snotty little brother, Matt, a little bit. But anyway, they were so thrilled to see me after so long that they immediately took the opportunity to turn me into an unpaid babysitter, right? So they could go to a Halloween party. Nice to be home. Considering it's fair compensation, I had a couple glasses of wine from my mom's open bottle of Malbec. It was to dull the tedious misery of trick-or-treating with my little brother. I was working the warm buzz behind my eyes, softening the sharp edges of Matt's constant adolescent prattling. I would tune in for every third or fourth word, nodding encouragingly with a disinterested smile. He was dressed up as a little Iron Man, his chest beam and hand lights making electronic humming noises as they illuminated the sidewalk in front of us. It had been a pretty good haul. Matt's bag was so full of candy that he kept shifting it from one plastic laser gauntlet to another when his arms finally got tired. We were almost done with the last block. Everyone's door knocked on except for the corner house. At 3 in the afternoon and from a safe distance, I had managed to suppress my childhood fears. But just past 9 on Halloween, the old paranoia started to creep back into my stomach. I was trying to think of something I could bribe Matt with if he could just let us skip this house, when he made a whoosh sound and ran up the driveway toward the witch's door. I was tempted to write the little bastard off as a lost cause and just go home, but he turned around halfway to make sure that I was coming with him. The gravel crunched under my sneakers as I walked past the station wagon she had parked there before I was even born, by the way. I turned nervously to glance toward the dusty side windows of the dead vehicle. Through the grime, a half dozen cats watched me from the safety of the other side of the glass. I could hear their chorus of rumbling growls warning me not to try anything funny or get close. There were more peeking from underneath the house, their eyes glowing from the headlights of a passing car. They paced behind the overgrown skirt of the house, dozens of them having made the foundation of her house their nest. I tried to ignore the army of strays as Matt took to the stairs and up the witch's porch. He hopped onto the welcome mat with both feet, straining for a moment to reach that doorbell. and as soon as it buzzed, he struck up a pose, ready to blast the lady if she didn't comply. The door creaked open ominously just as I caught up with Matthew. It was dark inside, aside from the dull orange glow of the fireplace and flickering blue and white of an old television. Lit from behind the witch's silhouette was a lanky, twisted thing. Her spine was tilted at several horrible angles, as if her back had given out under the sheer weight of all her evil. Only the fringes of her wild black hair caught the light, giving her a terrifying halo like an insect's nest. As she reached out a bony and gnarled hand out past the doorframe, she grasped hungrily towards us, her vile claws sweeping a few inches over Matt's head to take hold of a slender chain. The witch's knuckles popped audibly as she gripped the pull chain tightly and yanked it down. It made a sound like a chicken's neck snapping, and the hanging porch light groaned with a dull hum as the fluorescent bulb warmed up. Matt was frozen in place, just as terrified as I was, as the witch let out a laugh that was a moist gurgle. It rose to a hiss in the back of her throat, her whole twisted frame shuddering menacingly as the light finally came to life. "Oh, hello, aren't you precious?" she gushed over Matt, coughing into her hand and clearing her throat. Her voice was less wicked witch and more kind of Minnesota mother as she threw out a friendly, "I thought all the trick-or-treaters went home for the night, don't you know?" She blended the last three words into a single, "Don't you know?" before straightening up. In the bright fluorescent, I could make out the multiple kittens and the glitter on her faded pink sweatshirt. She smiled a big white-toothed smile at Matt expectantly, and it took him a moment to remember his line. His little brain was obviously having trouble processing the sudden change in mood as he timidly asked her, "Trick or treat?" The vile tangle on the top of her head that I had mistaken for snakes and crawling insects turned out to be simple bedhead from where she had apparently crashed hard on the couch. Her black frizzy hair was matted wildly off to one side in the kind of cowlick you can only get from sleeping off too many drinks. The witch lifted her eyes toward me. While my own eyes were watering from the stink of whiskey and far too much perfume, she said, "Well, he's adorable. She seemed to lose her train of thought as she stared at me curiously, her smile broadening ever so slightly, as if she recognized me. She continued talking, saying, "I have a special treat for both of you. Just be a moment." She vanished back inside her house for a few seconds, hardly time for the stench of her perfume to dissipate, before she returned with an aluminum baking sheet and a thin spatula. With a deft swoop of her hand and a sharp pop, she pried free a cookie, set down the spatula, and held out the prize to Matt. It was a gingerbread cat. Of course it was. The scent of caramel and fresh vanilla cutting through the fog of her boozy stench as Matt took it from her. The treat was so fresh and soft, I could see a dimple from the pressure of Matt's tiny, plastic-like fingertips. Its fur was lovingly scored into the cookie, chocolate and caramel traced meticulously into the line of work. I had to admit that if she ever got tired of being a drunken cat lady, she could probably get a job as a high-end baker. As Matt breathed in an almost silent thank you, the witch turned her attention to me. "Oh, and something for Big Sis," she said. She set down the now empty cookie pan, the surface marred by the burnt outlines of where five kitty cookies had baked, and from the side table she produces this small craft-colored rectangular box. Something rattled inside it softly as she handed it to me, but I noticed, tied to the hand-curled orange and black ribbons on the front, were a trio of small bottles of pumpkin-spiced vodka. The witch didn't let go of the box, offering me a playful wink. "You're 21, right?" I smirked, and I lied with a wordless nod. She let go of the box and offered me a knowingly smile before she warned me, "Well, a good babysitter needs something to take the edge off. Just have a couple, though. Don't open the big surprise unless the little Iron Man here starts to get out of hand. Then you should open it, and you will thank me for the help." "Ha, thanks," I said. "I'll let you know." Feeling a little silly after all those years of self-induced trauma. "You have a happy Halloween, miss." I didn't know. I let it hang, because after all these years, I never actually learned her name. She smiled her bright, big smile one more time, brushing cookie crumbs off her kitten sweatshirt as she giggled. "I always have a happy Halloween. After all, I'm the Witch of Redbud." I spent the rest of the walk home feeling utterly stupid. I knew the Tooth Fairy and Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny weren't real. I knew that a decade ago, but some small childish part of me still believed that a sad, lonely woman was going to eat me if I got too close to her. At least Matt wouldn't have to grow up in this town believing stupid stuff like that. Now that he'd actually met the witch, he was merrily scarfing down the gingerbread cat as we walked, the gummy caramel causing him to smack and chew loudly with each bite till it softened. By the time we got home, he had a little Tony Stark mustache and goatee made of dark chocolate, and I told him, just go wash that off. I prepped a cup of coffee, waiting for the Keurig to spit and hiss at the end, before emptying two of those mini bottles of pumpkin vodka into the cup. My buzz was wearing off, and I knew Matt was going to be up for at least another hour from the sugar high alone. He returned from the bathroom with his helmet and gloves off, knowing full well he would need the full range of motion in his fingers if he was going to start sorting through the candy efficiently. We dumped the bags over, separating the hard candy from the good stuff, like Ziplocs of cookies and fudge and fun-sized chocolates. For safety concern purposes, we would eat every fifth or sixth piece to make sure there was no THC or razor blades hidden in those Snicker bars. After two peanut butter cups, half a Toblerone, a bag of chocolate cookies, and a mini toffee bar, I was done with the inspection. Matt wasn't content and gorged on what he had to have been half of his body weight in sugar. I sent him to bed just before 11. He was wise beyond his years and made me pinky swear not to eat any more of his candy while he slept. Well, I, of course, go through the candy some more, taking what I think sounds good. And later on, he wakes up and he comes out saying his stomach hurts. And I'm thinking, well, no kidding. He goes on to tell me more, but he's kind of shaking his head slowly and he's trying to talk, but instead of words, a torrent of blood and congealed chocolate spills past his lips and onto his face. I start screaming. I leap off the couch trying to wipe the gore out of his eyes. I felt my own rise and I'm tasting blood and peanut butter and I'm instantly awake and sober. Well, Matt continues to empty the contents of his guts onto our white sofa, and even though I was worried for Matt, my first thought was that God, my parents were going to blame the couch on me. I carried him to the kitchen as the vomiting subsided. Unfortunately, without that awfulness to occupy his throat, now Matt's screaming and flailing on the tile. I called 911, rattling off our address while Matt tore off his shirt with a mewling shriek. The dispatcher was telling me it would be around 10 minutes as I watched my brother's stomach twist and deform. Something was inside of him, desperately trying to get out. Matt's stomach was distended, as if he were pregnant, the thrashing limbs of something inhuman within, causing the skin to redden and bulge. I was getting really freaked out. He twisted and kicked, desperate for the pain to end, knocking the sole of his tiny foot against the kitchen table, which in turn knocks the box the witch had given me over the edge, and it lands with a thunk and a rattle. On the bottom of the box was written, with a playful filigree, were the words, "You should open me now." In that moment, I remembered the almost playful way she said that. If Matt started to get out of control, I should open it. Desperate beyond any rational thought at this point, I leapt into the box, tearing it open. I felt my heart sink at the sight of what she had packed inside for me. Inside, nestled on top of purple and black tissue paper, was a bright orange-handled box cutter. In the same cheerful and elegant handwriting were two words, "You are welcome." I kicked away the box, shaking my head as Matt squealed and coughed up dark bubbles of blood. He was starting to get pale with a blue tinge settling into his quivering lower lip. His stomach settled as his chest rose. Matt had stopped breathing, his eyes pleading, as if whatever this thing was inside him decided to try and escape through his esophagus. He was choking on whatever it was. He was trying to burrow out of his throat. Tears were streaking down his face, cutting paths through the blood on his cheeks. I reached for the box cutter, the razor blade extending with a soft click as I crawled over to him on all fours. I ran my fingers across his still distended stomach, and the thing shifted at the touch. It retreated back into the stomach, and Matt took in a deep and grateful breath before squealing again. A limb of some kind pushed back against my fingers as if to reassure me that I was in the right place. I didn't even want to watch my own actions, but I wasn't going to cut Matt open with my eyes closed. He was struggling, his little frame surprisingly strong. I put a knee on top of his chest to hold him down with my weight. This blade was blessedly sharp. Blood gushed from the wound, but I paid it no mind as I widened the hole. I had a sense of deja vu as I finished the 2-foot-long cut. I held open the gash. The thing inside sounded just like the witch's cats warning me away with a keening growl. It came out head first, a chocolate and tan calico cat, its fur caked in blood and streaks of actual chocolate. The thing had an appalling likeness to the gingerbread cookie version, even sporting a single mismatched dot of white fur where the frosting had been. It leapt past me and ran out of the kitchen, leaving a trail of bloody paw prints on our white tile floor. I was too busy trying to stifle the blood with Matt's t-shirt to chase the thing. The paramedics were a couple of minutes early, thankfully, but too late by far to have saved Matt if I hadn't opened him up. The police officer was kind enough to tell me during the questioning that Matt was going to be fine, and he reassured me that I would get to see my grandparents once again after he finished taking my statement. I was too broken at that point to even consider trying to lie. I told him everything. I confessed to everything, even stealing my mom's wine. It was only after I finished that it dawned on me that nobody was going to believe me. I was going to be arrested, or worse, committed to some loony bin where my parents would never visit me, and I'd never be able to get out. What was going to happen to me? "We're done," the officer said. "I got your statement. Your parents are waiting, but I'm going to have a word with them first." Still thinking, what's going to happen to me? "You're going home," he came back and said. I was too wrapped up in my own trauma to notice that the detective was clearly going through some stuff of his own. His eyes were bloodshot, and they were dark as if he hadn't slept in a week. He sighed and rested a hand on mine. "I have to go talk to the other kids. Just can you wait here until I'm finished, and then I will take you to your parents." I look at him and I say, "Other kids?" It was when he said "other kids" that everything fell into place and I understood. I remembered that the witch's baking sheet had the outline of 5 cookies baked onto it, and I remembered all those cats on her property glaring at people, warning them away. All of those cats. I knew then that if I ever went by and watched long enough, I'd spot that chocolate and tan calico with the white spot. I never did test the theory, though. The cops never arrested her. They hadn't even bothered to question her in 20 years of Halloweens. But what would they put in their report? That she was growing cats out of gingerbread and children's bellies? That was way too insane. No one outside of town would even believe it. 2/3 of the townies themselves wouldn't believe it. Like my dad said all those years ago, nowadays we don't burn witches, we just avoid them. So all I can do is warn you, stay away from the old witch at the corner of Redbud. And if you can't do that, at least check for razors in your candy. And that's your Halloween haunt for today, guys. Thank you for listening, and until next time, and I will talk to you all soon.